Welcome back to another episode of Talking Moto. That's right, we got an episode 2 weeks in a row here. We are on a hot streak, that's for sure. East Rutherford recap, very interesting. There was a little bit of a beatdown I don't think any of us were expecting in the 450 race. Like, should be no surprise, 250 East, as tight as it could possibly get still, it seems like. Even though we might not have a tied at the top of the points like we have the last couple weeks, it is still about as tight as it could possibly get. So, let's just jump right into it here with the 250 East qualifying. We had, coming into the race, we had Seth Hamaker, RJ Hampshire, both tied on points. RJ Hampshire dealing with a little bit of an injury still, not a little bit, a pretty significant one with his wrist still, which is the reason he is over here on the East Coast and not on the West Coast racing like he was originally scheduled to do. So he's still dealing with that. Seth Hamaker kind of reviving his career here on that Monster Energy Pro Circuit Kawasaki. And he goes out and gets the fastest qualifier with a 51.521. RJ Hampshire in second with a 52.595. So Seth Hamaker from the absolute jump was much faster. Big part of it, skimming the whoops. That'll be whoop section will be in the big takeaways for both 450 and 250. RJ Hampshire just, I don't want to give too much away here, but just couldn't quite hang on, literally and metaphorically, with his wrist. Tom Viel, who came in 3 points back of both of them, qualified third with a 52.655. And Austin Faulkner showing a little bit of revival to his career, looking the fastest he's looked all season long on his new Triumph, qualifies fourth with a 52.691. Excuse me. Who else we got here? Nate Thrasher qualifying top five. A now race winner in Chance Hymus after Foxborough qualifying eighth. And I think one of the bigger surprises here, Colin Park after Foxborough, everybody likes to say the mud is the great equalizer. After Foxborough, he has kind of thrown his hat in the ring to go top five in points. He's now fourth in points overall. Really just showed a lot more speed than, well, getting a lot better results. I don't know if he's got a lot more speed because, to be honest, haven't truly been, like, dialed in on how is Colin Park doing, but might have to start doing that next year. So he qualified sixth with a 53.010. But one thing from qualifying that really stands out, once again, is the Seth Hamaker being a full second faster than RJ Hampshire and the rest of the field. And Austin Faulkner throwing his hat back into the ring as what could be maybe a potential race winner here. They got 250 East. They got two more races left. Maybe Austin Faulkner can mess around and shake things up a little bit as we head into Pittsburgh next week. But we still got all of East Rutherford to talk about still. So let's get into 250 Heat number one. Chance Hymus, mentioned him earlier. He went out, got a very good start. I can't recall off the top of my head who grabbed the whole shot. Lane Shaw, I think, grabbed the whole shot. Privateer. Then he got a little funky in the long rhythm section. Hymus was able to get by. Lane Shaw, he made a mistake. Kind of came up short. Oh, no, I lost it. There it is. Kind of came up short a little bit. Off to the side, off to the left. Gets back going, and RJ Hampshire comes in, and boom. Almost lands on him. Very close call for both of them. But they were both able to keep it up on two wheels. RJ Hampshire able to make his way into third because of that. And Chance Hymus looked very fast in the whoops. Thought maybe we can get a dry track win for Chance Hymus. Very dry track, might I add. It got very dry and seemed to get a little bit harder than what probably most everybody was expecting when the sun came out and started to bake that sucker during the heat races and LCQs and main events and everything like that. But Forkner, I mentioned him, qualified his best fourth. He had a little bit of a scary one. Got thrown off pretty hard in the rhythm section. He is wearing that new Alpine Stars, I think it's like called the AirTech chest protector or whatever, where it's got an airbag system built into it. And when it notices like a certain amount of G's or sudden, I don't know, I don't understand the science or research or engineering, whatever it is, I don't understand it. I just know it's an airbag system, and it's been in road racing for a while now. And Chad Reed, I do know, was played a big part in the development and like testing behind it. So Austin Forkner, hate to say it, but maybe the correct guy to be the first one wearing this in the pros. It did explode, but I mean, didn't really do too much, landed on his arms and whatnot. So he was able to get up and finish in fourth place. And RJ Hampshire in second had about a second and a half up until Chance Hymus, up to Chance Hymus, excuse me. And then he cut that all the way down to half a second with on the second to last lap. And Hymus won by maybe, I think RJ Hampshire is probably about half a bike length behind Hymus's back tire. So very impressive. Good overall start to the heat race and day for Chance Hymus. Probably didn't quite qualify exactly where he wanted to, but he was still able to go out, get a good start, capitalize on a mistake by, like I said, Lane Shaw, I do believe it was, and not let the pressure from one of the championship guys get to him in his heat race. So now let's head over to 250 heat number two, where we had two more championship guys, Seth Hamaker and Tom Viel. But it was Nate Thrasher going out, grabbing the whole shot. Hamaker in second, Viel in third. And then it seemed very, very, very quickly, Viel became a distant third place, was down 4 seconds to Seth Hamaker very early in the race, who was putting on just absolute constant pressure on Nate Thrasher. It was a little bit of a more boring race. Nothing too crazy or exciting, or no big chances at a pass like RJ had on Chance in heat number one. Nate Thrasher just kind of went out, did what he needed to do, grabbed the win with Seth Hamaker right behind him. And then I mentioned Tom Viel very quickly became a distant third place. He then became an even more distant third place by finishing about 12 seconds behind Nate Thrasher and Seth Hammaker. So, so it doesn't really seem like Tom Vielle quite has the speed that it will take this year to win a main event, just because in qualifying, it doesn't quite seem like he has it. In heat races, it hasn't really seemed like he's had it. Main events, honestly, I can't think of one off the top of my head where I have Tom Vielle leading. Foxborough, Vielle hole shot, Vielle mistake. And then obviously we all know what happened in that that main event with Vielle getting 20 seconds somehow, which I still don't really understand. So yeah, kind of got on a little tangent there, but that's okay. There's nothing wrong with going on a little tangent. So Nate Thrasher wins 250 heat number two, Hammaker second, Vielle third, like I mentioned earlier. And now where we got a little bit of excitement, not a crazy whole lot or anything like that. Pretty honestly, it was a very calm day for the most part, except for one thing that happened in qualifying, which we will get at the very, very end of the show. So now, let's just rip the Band-Aid off here and let's just jump right into the 250 main event in East Rutherford, New Jersey. So, Seth Hammaker got probably the best jump out of everybody else in the entire field. He led them all into turn one. About halfway through turn one, he still had the lead, but then Nate Thrasher was able to sneak up the inside on him, grab the hole shot. We had RJ, I guess technically when they went across the hole shot line, these are the positions I got written down here. RJ was in second, Hammaker in third, and Vielle was in seventh. So not the best start by Vielle, but he was able to make his way into fourth pretty, pretty fast. And Hammaker was also able to make his way into the lead basically just as fast. He was able to go inside right before the big Supercross triple, make the pass, and make it stick there on Nate Thrasher. And then I noticed Hammaker, also Wygant, Jason Wygant, did a really good job talking about how Hammaker ideally wanted to hit the whoops in fifth gear this weekend, which is just absolutely flying, which, I mean, the fastest way to do it, to get through whoops, is to go fast, and fifth gear allows you to go the fastest. So he was hitting them in fifth gear. He would skim the first set of whoops, but then he would jump the second set. So I just thought it was kind of interesting to see different strategies and whatnot of getting through these giant whoops. So that was his strategy. Like I mentioned a little bit ago, RJ Hampshire's strategy originally was to blitz them. He said his wrist just, he couldn't blitz them and hang on and possibly save himself from a mistake, so he just had to jump them. And looking at replays, jumping them was even getting pretty sketchy for RJ Hampshire. But Chance Hymus was the one who got the sketchiest, sadly. Going through that long rhythm section, he comes up tripling out. He comes up just a touch short, and his back wheel kind of clips the face of the jump he was trying to downside, and it just threw him right over. It went flying over the bars, like right on his shoulder, and that was it. With about 12 minutes left, that was the end of Chance Hymus's race. I'm not sure if he has posted an update yet. Chance Hymus. Here we go. The highs and lows are heavy sometimes. Back to work and be better next weekend. Thank you to the team for working hard on the bike all day. Good improvements all around. And then yesterday, I'm going to assume this is an old video then. He's posted a picture today on his Instagram that he is back riding. So, and he said, obviously, in that post that I just read off, he will be back and ready for Pittsburgh when the time comes around. So, very, very happy about that. Whoops. Different topic now. The gap from Hammaker to RJ Hampshire. I feel like we missed something here. No? Okay. The gap from holy smokes, Hammaker to RJ Hampshire is staying at about 3.5 seconds. And just like in the heat race, Tom Vielle, like I said, in the heat race, he was a very distant third place. And now in the main event, he started becoming a very distant third place once again. So Tom Vielle, I don't foresee winning this championship unless he is able to figure something out here going into Pittsburgh to make it close. I mean, I'll tell you guys my dream scenario at the end of this. I just don't exactly see Tom Vielle finding the speed kind of out of nowhere to be able to go back-to-back here in the East on the 250s. Seth Hammaker, coming off of his win last week in Philly, just really carried all the momentum. He became the first repeat winner in the 250 East this year, with RJ Hampshire in second, now his closest title rival, and Tom Vielle, who is might slowly become a distant third place in the points like he did in both of his races this week, heat race and main event included. Another interesting note here, Seth Hammaker was also running the fastest lap times, or he had the fastest lap time in all of the main event. He ran a 51.964, and the next closest would be RJ Hampshire it would be Nate Thrasher in fifth place overall with a 52.192. So Seth Hammaker carried the speed all day long from qualifying to the main event. This might be Mitch Payton Pro Circuit's chance to finally win another 250 title. It's been, I guess, since like, I think 2018 maybe. I heard Justin Hill or Josh Hill, one of the Hill brothers, was the last one for the Monster Energy Pro Circuit Kawasaki team. Big takeaway time. starting it off, we'll combine these first two into one because I talked a little bit about them already. Seth Hammaker being the first repeat winner here in the East really separates himself in the championship now. Well, I can't say really separates himself in the championship now, but separates himself better than what it was coming into the race, which was zero separation. There was a tie. Now going 3 points up on RJ Hampshire, and also the ability that Seth Hammaker was just able to just say, hey, hold my nuts, we're hitting these whoops in fifth gear. Probably the sketchiest whoops. I almost just said sketchiest nuts. Probably the sketchiest whoops that we have seen all year. And he said, bring them on, we're hitting them in fifth gear. I got two more. One of them, the whoops. The whoops will be in the big takeaway again for the 450s. But they were such a separation point for Seth Hammaker to be able to skim at least the first set and then have to jump the second set. But with him skimming the first set and RJ having to jump both of them due to his wrist injury, it just really put a divide in between them two. And one of the main reasons Seth Hammaker was able to get the win over RJ Hampshire. My last one, the man in third place, down 7 in the points now, your defending champion, Thomas Vielle. He's probably not a Thomas, I don't think they do Thomases in France, but Tom Vielle, he needs to do something. He needs to go out, he needs a win, plain and simple. There was points in this season already in the 450 class where I was like, hey, Chase Sexton needs a win. He was able to go out, get some wins. Now he's pulling himself closer. His 250 teammate, Tom Vielle, he needs to win in Pittsburgh, in my opinion, if he wants a little bit better than an outside shot going into Salt Lake in the last round. Which, I mean, it doesn't take a freaking rocket scientist to figure that one out. He's down by 7 points, 2 rounds left. My dream scenario, I don't know how it happens, but I want a 3-way tie going into Salt Lake. I want a winner take all between three guys because that is awesome. Who would not want to see that? The chaos of a 3-way tie, the chaos of an East-West shootout. That would just be very, very exciting for, I'm assuming, all of us fans, but I know I would really find that exciting. So, yeah, I think that will wrap up the 250 East talk. Obviously, we'll get predictions and whatnot at the end of the episode here. Sweet. 250s. Check them off the board for the East Rutherford recap. All right, it is now time for the big guys, the 450s. Now, coming into East Rutherford here, we needed Chase Sexton. Well, it's not we needed. Chase Sexton needs to at least win out starting last week, which he did. Now, East Rutherford needs to win the next four, with Cooper Webb getting at least second in all these last races. Sexton would still be your champion due to the tiebreaker of main event wins. Chase Sexton pops Cooper Webb with the old fingy guns. Cooper Webb then goes out, qualifies fastest in qualifying number one. there was a little one-line zinger out there saying how he recovered fast this past week over his gunshot wound. Thought that was pretty funny, to be honest. But then qualifying number, well, overall qualifying, Justin Cooper becomes your fastest qualifier. So I think I mentioned it last week. Justin Cooper on the 250 was a little bit of a fast qualifying machine. Also very good at starts on the 250. Kind of starting to see that come back a little bit here for Justin Cooper as he qualified first with a 51.442. Just 1/10 in front of Chase Sexton with a 51.553, who is then just 0.04 in front of Cooper Webb with a 51.593. So these top three, very close. Obviously, we're going to be keeping our eyes peeled here on Chase Sexton and Cooper Webb as this series winds down towards the end here. Also, Ken Roczen qualified fourth with a 51.937. I know in the first qualifying, he was about 12th, I think. So obviously they found a little something. Maybe Ken Roczen just got a little bit looser feeling on the bike there. And really put down a very good lap, considering in qualifying group A qualifying one, Ken Roczen fifth. Okay, I must remember seeing that before qualifying was officially over. So it's just, all right, ignore everything I just said, like probably most of the time. Anyway, Cooper Webb, nope, Justin Cooper. Those two should never be allowed to be in the same heat because it is so difficult to try and take notes on what's going on when it's Justin Cooper battling Cooper Webb. Same team as well, so like I can't even put down like team. Difficult. Justin Cooper qualifies first, Sexton second, and Cooper Webb third. Old Dean O. Wilson keeping it good with his number 15, qualifying 15th. Aaron Plessinger, little struggles here in qualifying, but he was able to figure it out as the day and night went. Well, I guess day, because it started, it was a 3 o'clock race. Aaron Plessinger qualified 11th with a 53.249. So, I mean, he was a good bit off the pace here in qualifying, but like I mentioned, he was able to figure it out when, I guess you can say, real gate drops started. I don't know. 450, heat number one. Chase Sexton might have had one of the sneakier hole shots of all time. He was on the inside and just absolutely just hugged that very inside. Thought he was going to get shut down. Wasn't going to let that happen. And just snuck around the inside with the hole shot. And he had old Kenny Roczen right behind him the entire time. Well, not the entire time, but most of the time. The gap was about a second or so, second and a half, 2 seconds. And then Chase Sexton was just able to open it up. And he, like, a little bit boring, not going to lie. Not too much battling going on. Sexton was able to open up to about a 5.5 second lead at the end. So he won by about 5.5 seconds. Might be a little foreshadowing on how good old Chase Sexton was feeling, especially with that whoop, them whoop sections, them back-to-back whoops. Boy, was he flying. So, yeah, Sexton goes out, wins his heat race. Ken Roczen in second. And then essentially the hometown kid from New York, Justin Barcia, in third place. I think the cool part about heat number one was Roczen, Colt Nichols, and Kyle Chisholm. All three, the factory Suzuki team guys, all three were in this heat race, almost just said main event, and all three qualified directly into the main event out of their heat race. So, yeah, nothing special really about that. I just thought it was pretty cool that happened. Right before the gate drop, I was like, oh, hey, looky there. We got all three in the same heat. Pretty neat. Also, now looking at the results, the top nine is obviously what they take to the main event. Eight out of the top nine were from the great old United States. And the only one who is not from here is now one of us, Ken Roczen, the German. He was also the only foreign-born rider in that heat race. So I guess shout out Ken Roczen, doing it for the entire world in that heat race. A little bit more diversity here heat number two for the 450s. Justin, this is going to get confusing now with the Coopers and the Webb and the Justin. Hi, yay, yay. Justin Cooper grabs the whole shot, like I mentioned. He was real good at qualifying on a 250. Very good. Starting on the 250 as well. It's starting to come back to him a little bit here in Supercross. Justin Cooper grabs the whole shot with AP in second and Cooper Webb in third. And one thing I noticed, lap number one, Justin Cooper was already jumping through the whoops, and Cooper Webb was skimming through the whoops, and that right there just showed you how big of a difference these whoops would be jumping compared to skimming, and how much faster skimming would be. So Cooper Webb was able to catch up to him in that section, and then through the long rhythm section, Justin Cooper thought he was going to have the inside, leaked a little outside over the Supercross triple. Cooper Webb went inside and then inside again on the next corner in the little double-double section before the on-table off before the finish line. And that's where Cooper Webb was able to make the pass and make it stick with Justin Cooper. Did not let him go, though. Your training partners, teammates, all that, whatnot. So that was a exciting heat race, because with them two battling the entire time, the cowboy, Aaron Plessinger, was able to kind of sneak his way up into the picture a little bit, but did still end up finishing third with Justin Cooper in second, and like I said, Cooper Webb in first, and Grandpa Earl, Dino Wilson, in sixth. Straight into the main event for old Grandpa Earl. You know, now that we're on him, Dean Wilson jumps on new bike, similar bike, new team than what he has been riding. He's going out there, putting in consistent results. Very good, very solid. And then Christian Craig. I hate to be going at Christian Craig like this, but I mean, I guess it's got to happen. He seems like he is struggling very, very much. Yes, I know he's going also onto a new bike. Same team that he had some 450 experience on, this, or some 250, sorry, on this Yamaha team. He also did have some 450 on there as well. Left the Yamaha team after, or going into the 2023 Supercross. So he was on Husky for a little bit, and now he's back on the Yamaha. And he seems to be struggling maybe a little bit more than he should. Maybe the injury that he was dealing with is not really allowing him to be his best. It's kind of, honestly, kind of in the same spot as Dylan Ferrandis for me. Where Dylan Ferrandis, except this time, Ferrandis leaves the Yamaha, and it seems like he took a big step down. He was a lot. Ferrandis was a championship guy every year. A little bit more on the motocross side, especially with him winning the 450 Motocross Championship his rookie year. A little bit faster outdoors, but he's always been very, very solid indoors on the Yamaha, and now seems like Ferrandis, since he's moved to that Honda, trying to get a little bite of that Lawrence apple on the HRC Honda team, it just hasn't really seemed to work out for him as much. So I think that will just about wrap us up here for heat races, qualifying, all that. So now only one thing left to do, talk about a little bit of a, I guess the best way to put it, a little bit of an ass whooping here from old Chase Sexton. So to start it off, Chase Sexton got a great jump, was able to grab the hole shot with that as well, and he had none other than Cooper Webb right behind him, and I was so very excited for this. And then they got to the whoop section for the first time. Chase Sexton went skimming through him. Cooper Webb went jumping through him. Got a little bit of a gap. Sexton did to Cooper Webb throughout that lap. Cooper Webb was able to reel him in a little bit more, and then they get back to the whoop section. And the gap that Cooper Webb closed down, Sexton would open back up. And once again, throughout the next lap, Cooper Webb would close it down. Not as much this time as he did the lap before. And it got to the point where the whoop time for Sexton, the average whoop time for Sexton, was 5.935. Took me too long to read. And Cooper Webb's whoop time was 6.271. I'm not a mathematician, but 5.9 seconds in 6.2 seconds, if it's a race, you would rather have the 5.9. And yeah, that's what Sexton was using completely to his advantage. He was able to just destroy. Probably that might be the only word. I did just call it a bit of an ass whooping. But Sexton was able to just destroy lap after lap after lap after lap Cooper Webb in the whoops. With 5 minutes into the race, the gap was already 4.7 seconds in the favor of Chase Sexton. It was absolutely insane. Sexton looked, which we got rumors about Sexton in his next years, but Sexton looked like in complete control over the entire track. Cooper Webb looked in control over most of the track except for the whoops, and that's the problem that came up and got Cooper Webb. Was he's always been I would say below average in the whoops. So he's always leaned towards jumping. They went into this year thinking, well, we got to find a setting for skimming. Jumping's not an option. Jumping's not an option. And then lap one of the main event, the biggest main event of the year, that can be said, starting last week in Philadelphia. If this train keeps rolling, you'll be able to say it all the way up until the main event in Salt Lake City. It's the biggest main event of the year to date. And Cooper Webb just goes out there and he jumps lap one of the whoops. Now, yes, they showed the whoops after the race, and they were an absolute minefield. It looked insane. I don't understand how Chase Sexton was able to skim the whoops the entire time. I would have liked to see maybe Cooper Webb give it a shot the first two, three laps maybe, and then be like, all right, just kind of cut the losses and then jump them and just kind of admit defeat and take a solid second place, point saving, or saving as many points as he can. But it just seemed with him jumping the whoops from lap one, like he was just, it seemed like he gave up at that point already. And then, I mean, 5 minutes into the race, it's a 4.7 second gap. He better hope that there's some jumping whoops and only jumping whoops next week in Pittsburgh, Denver. I see big whoops incoming in Denver. Don't know why, just see it in my brain. I think we're going to have big whoops in Denver. You go to Salt Lake City. Chase has won the last 2 years in Salt Lake City. I'm rambling on, getting a little distracted here from the main event, but that's okay because it's my show. Cooper Webb needs to skim whoops. Bottom line, at least needs to give him a shot. I don't remember. He skimmed them in the heat race. I almost just said I don't remember what he did in the heat race, but he skimmed them in the heat race. So he can do it. He was in heat race number two. He could have done it. He easily, not easily, nothing was coming easy to anybody in the whoop section except if your name was Chase Sexton. But I don't know. We'll get to that later. So not too much crazy happened from that 15 or that 5 minute in mark to the halfway mark, where 10 minutes left, the gap grew even more to 11.1 seconds, and Chase Sexton pulled out. Might be why the gap grew a little bit more in this next 5 minutes compared to the first 5 minutes, was Chase Sexton pulled out a line where he was jumping over the start straight. A lot of guys were going over the start straight onto the table and then just kind of like awkwardly coming off the table and then finishing the rhythm section. Sexton, he pulled the hammocker, hold my nuts, in the whoop section. He pulled it going all the way over the table, and it was insanely faster. It was so much faster than going on the table and then just kind of rolling off and then getting out. So skimming the whoops and that big line, that is how Chase Sexton got a what did he get up to? 19 second lead at one point. So Chase Sexton is, he's fast, he's always been fast, and I think he always will be fast. One guy who was fast, is fast, and showed a little bit of fight here, old Bam Bam Barsha. He, although going through the whoops, he might have gotten a little ahead of himself. He was jumping through the whoops. front end gets a little low and his front wheel clips the very last whoop and he goes absolutely flying over the handlebars. He was running in third place at the time too. And after that happens, he goes to 18th. So yeah, the hometown kid, like I said earlier, from New York, goes from third place, big crash in the whoops, had to pull into the pits at one point, get his levers readjusted, his number plate was hitting himself in the knee or the leg, or same difference, it's all part of the same thing, and goes from third down to 18th, where he finished the race. And that allowed Aaron Plessinger, who rode very, very good, had pressure on Justin Barcia most of the race, just wasn't able to find a spot to make the pass, would catch up to Barcia, make a little mistake, and then he had Justin Cooper right behind him who would catch up to him. Justin Cooper would make a little mistake, Barcia would make a little mistake, Plessinger would get back up to him, and then that's when Barcia made that big, big mistake in the whoop section and allowed Plessinger and Justin Cooper and a list of other guys to get by him. So we got Cooper Webb, we got Aaron Plessinger, we got a little bit of Sexton. Sexton lapped all the way up to 8th place. The last person on the lead lap was the German Ken Roczen. Just a good job, Ken Roczen. And Sexton in the end won by 16.1 seconds. Chase Sexton. Well, like I mentioned, we got Cooper Webb earlier. We'll go to the other side of this championship now. Chase Sexton had, I think it was 90% of his wins in the last five rounds of the season on a 450. The last five rounds started last week. So last week, well, I guess 2 weeks ago in Philly, and now last week in East Rutherford, two rounds, two wins for Chase Sexton. So it's probably like 91% of his wins now. He just needs to keep this going. He has all the momentum. He had a little bit of smack talk, if you will, type of more Cooper Webb-style antics in Philly where he turned around and got him with the fingy gun that I was talking about. Got a little nervous there. Thought maybe Chase Sexton's fallen into Cooper Webb's game, but he didn't. He knew he's got the speed, and maybe it got in Cooper Webb's head a little bit about like, hey man, don't do that. Cooper Webb in Philly on the podium said, "We're gonna come back next week and kick his ass." And then on the podium this week, Cooper Webb, East Rutherford, said he didn't put his money where his mouth was. Chase Sexton, most of the time, has let his riding do the talking. He had that little moment in Philly. He went out there, he gets off the track, and he said to one of the, I think maybe the team manager, Ian Harrison, I believe it was, the last either 10 minutes or 10 laps was easy. The dude also had his fastest lap was almost a second faster than anybody else. And the guy in second place, Cooper Webb, he had the second fastest lap with a 52.003. Chase Sexton's fastest lap was a 51.254. So my man was flying out there. Sexton, now, down by only 9 points. If he keeps winning, he is the champion. Now, with that being said, we have sometimes seen Sexton too much and have a win, throw it away. He had a chance at his first win in Houston a couple years ago. Big lead, absolutely threw himself off the bike in a big crash. We saw Arlington this year where he had the Triple Crown win, went for the win in the third main event to beat Cooper Webb, crashes it. I think he ended up getting, was it third place in Arlington? He ended up getting because of it. Ends up third place in Arlington because he just got a little too excited. I made this reference a couple weeks ago, maybe about a month ago now, where Chase Sexton right now seems like late years Eli Tomac on the Kawasaki, where it seems like he makes, or not late years, middle years Eli Tomac on a Kawasaki, because he did end up getting that Supercross Championship in 2020 on the Kawasaki. Supercross-wise, Sexton, I compared him to Kawasaki Eli Tomac, where he has wins and everything. He just has 2-3 bad races, bad mistakes that take him out of the championship. And right now, that's exactly what we are looking at for Chase Sexton. I mean, he's got to win a total of 5 in a row if he wants to win this championship. He has already 1, 2, 3, 4. He's got 5 wins right now. He needs 3 more wins just so he can tie Cooper Webb in a championship. This is assuming Cooper Webb gets second place in all these. When Cooper Webb has 1, 2, 3, 4 wins. So Sexton's already got him beat in wins if the season ended today. But that also be saying, if the season ended today, Cooper Webb's got Chase Sexton beat in points. If Chase Sexton keeps his head on his shoulders, I do believe he could do it. It's just, I threw that if Chase Sexton. That if might be a little bit too much for him. Looking into Pittsburgh, first time in this stadium. It's going to be really interesting to see, are they just going to take the dirt from Philly, drive it across the state, or are they going to get new dirt? So I don't think anybody really has any idea on what the dirt's going to be. I think the last time Supercross was in Pittsburgh was 1983. So it's been a year or two since they've been there. Looking at the track, first turn looks good, goes into a nice long rhythm section, which hopefully is solid. Looks like it should be. Then a couple 180s, one maybe longer section of whoops. It's going to be interesting to see sizing and everything there. But they do have looks like you can either go double, triple into the whoops or triple, double into the whoops. And then kind of a little split lane type of 180 turn after the whoops, which I don't know how I feel about that. I really like just 180 turns, like into the whoops and out of the whoops. I don't know how this split turn will do. I'm sure the guys at Dirtworks or whatever, they get a little bit more knowledge than me building tracks. All I've done is just build tracks in a sandbox for toy dirt bikes when I was a kid. But I was pretty good at it. I won every race, too, by the way. Prediction time, and then we will have one more little bit of news here. So we are going to see the 250 East guys one last time before Salt Lake City. And I'm just going to pick Tom Vial because I want that chaos situation I was talking about. I want to have a three-way tie going into Salt Lake City because that would be fun. So I'm going to pick Tom Vial and hope everything else figures itself out. 450. Honestly, I think it's going to be, I said Cooper Webb last week. I think it's going to be Cooper Webb again this week. He is not happy. He seems very motivated. He seemed very motivated going into East Rutherford as well, but maybe track situations and whatnot didn't go his way. I'm taking Cooper Webb. I'm taking Tom Vial as my winners for Pittsburgh. One last thing we got here. Jerry Robin. There's been a lot going out around about him. He had a big crash in the qualifying number one this past weekend. I guess he posted the video of the crash. I didn't see it on his page. I saw it on someone else's. Honestly, like, it's just crazy to think that it didn't look like the biggest or craziest crash. He said he hit the three into that rhythm was huge and no room for air. And unfortunately, when I was putting my foot back on the peg, the tip of my boot caught my rear brake pedal just barely. Was enough to not make it. And with how steep the transitions were, it threw my forward. I'm assuming it's supposed to be threw me forward, and landed head first into the next 3-footer. And I guess he instantly went paralyzed. And as of now, it's belly button down. Surgeon was able to straighten his spine, which I guess is a huge positive. I don't know all like the medical things, so I'm just reading what he posted. He had to get his T3 through T9 fused yesterday after the crash, and he said, "We will see what this journey brings. I'm hopeful I can walk again." So, obviously, that's just terrible news for one of the privateer guys who make up the sport, really. And I know you can go to Road to Recovery. I think they got a website. Yeah, Road to Recovery. They got a bunch of stuff on there to try and help him out and take care of some of the things that you just can't take care of now with a freshly fused T3 through T9 vertebrae in his back. So wishing nothing but the best for Jerry Robin. You go to RacerX. They got an article on it at the bottom. They have a button where you can click to go to his Road to Recovery page, and try, you can throw some donations on there. So, yeah, hopefully everything goes as good as it can here for Jerry, Robin, and obviously a tough, unforeseen situation that he's now going through. But I guess no easy way to kind of transfer out of that. So, yeah, we'll be back next week talking Pittsburgh. Hopefully talking a little bit closer of a points race in the 450s and the 250 East class. Very, very, very excited. Talking underscore moto on X. Like always, go give it a follow, retweet, like, comment. Just anything. Really do appreciate it. All right, we will be back next week for Pittsburgh. See ya.